So, let me start here. You've heard me say this many times before. It's an absolutely wonderful gift to be born a human being. It is a wonderful blessing. And let me say why. Many reasons, but let me say this. There is an absolute intelligence and an ineffable love that is percolating in the depths of our souls, percolating in our hearts, and even percolating in our DNA. What is DNA? It's intelligence. Whose intelligence is it? It's the divine mind. It's divine intelligence. So we always have this, again, ineffable love, this absolute intelligence percolating in our depths. I'll say it a little bit differently. We are all a piece of life, a piece of God's life, a piece of the divine life. And that divine life is forever trying to break through and express itself through us and as us in new and evolutionary ways. That's why I say it's a great gift to be a human being. And all of the great avatars of history, they're not essentially different than you or me. They are just our evolutionary brothers and sisters who got there before us. But they embody the possibilities for all of us. So what I want to talk about tonight, it's a way of understanding spirituality, and the word is contact. Contact. Contact happens when two souls touch. Contact happens when we drop our psychological defenses, we drop our games, and we are transparent to another person, we are transparent to ourselves, we are transparent to the divine. That's contact. And you know that you are in contact with your soul or somebody else's soul or the soul of divine because you become more alive, you become wiser, you become more loving, you become stronger, you become more and more divine. Think about this in the context of your own life. How many times do you have conversations with people and there's lots of talking, but there's no contact? You can say one word or sometimes no words to somebody, but there's contact. Your souls are touching. And you become more alive, you become more human and more divine all at the same time. All spiritual practices are meant to bring us into greater and greater levels of contact with our own souls and hearts, with the souls of each other and the divine soul. And when that contact happens, divine life flows, divine energy flows. That intelligence that I was talking about, that ineffable love that I was talking about, bubbles up into our consciousness, into our lives, and divinizes us. Okay. So if that's true, what's the problem? And I'm going to read a text from the very beginning of the Bible, from Genesis. And again, you don't read Genesis as a scientific manual or as a strictly historical book. It's a story that contains meta-truths that were true yesterday, true today, and will always be true in the future. And in this story that I'm going to share, we capture what keeps this contact from happening. So it's about Adam and Eve. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves waist coverings. They were ashamed of their nakedness. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord, who wanted contact with them. God, as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and they hid from the Lord among the trees of the garden. Then the Lord called to them, and he said to them, "Where are you?" They answered, "We heard you were in the garden, and we were afraid because we are naked. So we hid." And then God says, "Who told you you were naked? Who told you to be ashamed of your nakedness? Who told you to be ashamed of your humanity? Who told you to be ashamed of yourself? I never did." I'm paraphrasing there, okay? So, there are two maladies, two psychological maladies that haunt all of us to a lesser or greater extent and keep us from having that contact. And we see it spelled out in this story. It's fear and shame. What happens when fear is gripping us? Our hearts constrict, they close. There can't be any contact when our hearts close, constrict. Shame is the most toxic of emotions. Shame isn't about guilt. Guilt says I did something wrong. Shame is I am wrong. I am broken. I am defective. And shame shuts down our souls. So what blocks us from that contact, and it's a universal phenomenon, what blocks us from that contact is this embedded fear and shame. And it does not come from God. I want to make that really clear. It does not come from God. The Bible says 365 times for each day, be not afraid. So then the question is, how do we work through, break through the fear and the shame? And I want to read you a gospel story, just very short. I didn't write it down, so I will paraphrase it for you. Jesus was in Capernaum, and people who were ill and possessed, and we'll talk about what that means in a few moments, came to Jesus. And the disciples were a little bit like, there's a lot of people coming this way. Jesus said, "Let them come to me." And then it says they stood at the door. And it says Jesus healed each one of them and was able to cast out the dark, evil spirits. So I want to break that story down because it tells us how we can begin to break through the fear and the shame that keeps us out of conscious contact with God. The first thing is that these people had no problem acknowledging that they were hurting. They had no problem acknowledging that they were in pain. See, the first instinct when the fear and the shame comes up is we put up some kind of psychological defense so we don't have to feel it. We go into some kind of denial, or we get caught up in some sort of compulsive, addictive behavior so we won't have to feel it. We put on this air of having it all together. That's not what these people did. They said, "Yes, I am hurting. Yes, I need healing. Yes, something isn't right in my life." And in that transparency, in that honesty, in that openness, they were able to make contact with the healing grace and power that was coming from Jesus. I'll say it this way. It's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to not have it all together. None of us do. We like to pretend that we do, but we don't. I've gotten to know a lot of holy people saint-like people. Some I would even call enlightened. But even those people have some kind of wound, some kind of brokenness in them. It's okay. And the paradox is, all that we have to do is acknowledge that wound and that brokenness to ourselves and to God and to each other. And there's a flow of grace that begins to happen, a flow of divine energy that washes away the fear and the shame. Most of you are familiar with the 12-step traditions. One of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous is the only condition that you have to meet to belong is to be imperfect. And it's okay to be imperfect. It's okay to be powerless. It's just about admitting that powerless that allows the grace to flow. Vicki and I were with our grandchildren and my son and our son and daughter all this past weekend in Nashville. And Vicki likes, I have a great wife, she likes to brag about me. So she says to them, you know, your father, he meditates 2 hours every morning. I said, Vicki, okay, you know. And later when my son and I were talking, he said, wow, you meditate 2 hours every morning. Like, you must, like, really? And I said, no, you don't understand. I meditate 2 hours every morning because I need to do that to pretend that I'm sane. Okay? That's a minimum requirement for me to be able to get through this life without being self-destructive. And you know what? That's okay. Sometimes in the spiritual life and the spiritual community, we think, you know, when we sit down to meditate, we have to, you know, do everything. You got to do the right things. Don't misunderstand me. But it's almost like we have to pretend that we're not in pain. We have to pretend that we're not in some kind of discomfort. We have to pretend that we really have it together. We have to pretend. Just that simple openness, vulnerability is the door that allows that grace to flow. Let me just comment little for a moment about healing people of demons and unclean spirits. And there's lots of levels to that, and there is a phenomenon of possession that is real, but I'm going to talk about it at a different level. Fear and shame, they're not little demons that possess you, but they are compulsions that possess you. I'm going to repeat that. They are compulsive emotions that possess us and constrict the heart and keep contact from happening. Whenever we really touch the depths of our souls or we touch somebody else's heart, we have that contact, or we touch the heart of the guru, we touch the heart of God, you know you're touching it because it dissolves and disintegrates the fear and the shame. Or at least makes it small enough that it doesn't overwhelm us and overshadow us. So how do we, in very concrete ways, nurture this contactfulness? The first thing, as we approach our own souls, each other's hearts and souls, and the heart and soul of God and the gurus, is just having that humility, that transparency, that sincerity, that honesty. Just to communicate from the depths of our hearts and souls who we really are and what's going on. That melts the heart of God. Anandamayi Ma, the great incarnation of the Divine Mother from India, she says, aren't I your mother? A mother can't neglect the cry, the sincere cry of a child. So it's just bringing who we are and approaching God and the Guru with that absolute sincerity. That's the first thing. Think of Yogananda. I won't read it. I was going to read it. I'll just, again, paraphrase it. Yogananda left his father's home. He was living in an ashram. It really wasn't working, although the head monk in the ashram was a holy man, but he wasn't Yogananda's guru, and it just wasn't working. And Yogananda finally admitted, again, that honesty, that transparency, this just isn't working. And then he approached God. And he prayed, and he prayed, and it said he sobbed, and he prayed, and he sobbed. Send me a God-realized teacher, or come down and teach me yourself. And I'm not going to stop until you promise you're going to send me. That was sincerity. And then he heard the Divine Mother speak to him. Your guru comes today. And then he met Sri Yukteswar that day. Just be your deepest, most honest self in meditation and prayer and with the divine and with at least one other human being. Clears away the shame and the fear, opens your heart, and that's where contact is made. Don't over sort of spiritualize the contact. I think I shared this story in an online class on Tuesday night when we were visiting. We have three grandsons, 8, 6, and 3. And they love to wrestle with me. Now, what the wrestling is, I get on the bed, I cover myself with pillows, and they just keep on jumping and jumping on me like I'm a trampoline. And at one point, Isaiah, who's just 3, he thought he hurt me. And he picked up the pillow and he hit the most vulnerable, sincere eyes. He said, Papa, are you okay? Did I hurt you? I said, no, I'm fine. Keep jumping. There was contact. There was transparency. That was a holy moment in a very human garb. So I want you just to get the feel of what I'm talking about. So sincerity is the first thing. What's the second thing? We have to bring energy to it. And energy is more than enthusiasm. It's bringing our passion, bringing our soul. You can't make contact with somebody if you're indifferent. Can't make contact with your own soul if you're being half-hearted about it. Can't make contact with God if you don't bring that energy. And it's really the energy of love that you're bringing to it. And you may not always feel it, but sometimes you got to stir it up inside. There's a way of stirring that love and stirring the spirit and stirring the Shakti up. But bring your best energy to contact with other people, your soul, and God. Be sincere, but bring energy, bring some passion to it. Doesn't mean you have to be emotional, but you just bring that energy. Then you let God know that you mean business. And that cuts through the fog, cuts through the dross. Bring energy to everything. The third thing, not very sexy, but it's very important. Endurance. If you don't make that conscious contact at first, okay. If you don't make it a second time, okay. You don't make it a third time, okay. You don't make it 100th time, okay. Keep it going. One of Yogananda's favorite poems, in fact, he had it on his bedside, was The Hound of Heaven. Sometimes we have to be a hound towards heaven. I've told this story before. In the very beginning of buying this building, the first year, we're going through a really difficult time. Somebody that was a trusted friend, kind of a spiritual big brother, turned on me. And it was just a period of tribulation. And Vicki was out of town. It was a Saturday. And I sat down in front of that picture of Yogananda. I said, I ain't moving until you give me an answer. Did I do something wrong? Is there something I need to learn? I'm not moving until you give me, I feel some sort of resolution. Even if you got to tell me I'm absolutely wrong in this case, I don't care. I'm not moving from this seat in front of your picture until something gives. And about a half hour later, it gave. I just felt this peace. It was okay. And I went upstairs to where our offices are, and there was a guy there that used to come to the Assisi Institute, and he had a sister from out of town, and he was showing her around the Assisi Institute, and he gave me an envelope. He said, there's a check inside of it. It's for the Assisi Institute. And I said, thank you very much. I opened the check in front of him. It was made for $1,952. Yogananda died in 1952. But I had the perseverance, I had the energy, and I was sincere. He couldn't say no to me. That's how it works. That's how we create contact. And sometimes, I'll put Barbara on the spot. Before we came in today, she told me she was mad at God for something. And she was having it out with God. That's okay too, because that creates the contact. You know, when you know as a counselor when a marriage is in trouble, when they stop fighting. If you're fighting, you care. And so that fighting creates contact. So it's okay, I don't want you to be mad at God all the time, but it's okay to go through periods where you get angry at God and you have it out. Yogananda used to say, he'd get mad at God. He said, why did you create this big nest of troubles? And then he'd say, we're just having a lover's quarrel. So you don't always have to be well-behaved in creating this contact. Be real. Jesus on the cross, what did he say? Father, why have you forsaken me? He was praying and engaging God. All right? That's how we create the contact. And we have to have that endurance. Again, it's not sexy, but it is necessary. And I'm going to close with a reading from Yogananda because he'll tell you how it works. Okay? This little book from Yogananda, I recommend that everybody get it. It's called How You Can Talk to God. But if you just pray to God through the cosmic ether, if your will is strong enough, the ether will respond with his voice. He is ever talking to you, saying, now he's speaking for God, call me. Speak unto me from the depths of your heart, from the core of your being, from the very depths of your soul, persistently, majestically, determinedly, with firm resolve in your hearts that you will go on seeking me no matter how many times I do not answer. If you unceasingly whisper in your heart to me, oh, my silent beloved, speak to me. I will come to you, my devotee. And then Yogananda says, and this is so true, I'm telling you this from personal experience. If you once can get that response, you will never feel separated from him again. The divine experience will always remain with you, but that once is difficult because the heart and mind are not convinced. They're overshadowed by fear and shame. Doubt creeps in because of our previous materialistic beliefs. I'll just close with this little metaphor. Once you make that conscious contact, it becomes easier and easier to turn on the switch. And you get to that point, you can turn on that switch whenever you want. The night before last, I wasn't feeling well. Discovered that I'm allergic to pistachio nuts. But the allergy was so bad that I actually thought I had COVID. I actually tested. I didn't have it. And the next morning, it was gone. But what I'm trying to say is I was discouraged when I went to bed. And then I thought, I don't have to be discouraged. Well, how can I not be discouraged? When you go to bed, talk to God. So I went to bed, and I just kept on talking to God in my own little way. And just like Yogananda said, the switch went on. Discouragement went away. I still had the allergies, but the discouragement went away. And that contact was there. All the spiritual practices are about one thing, conscious contact. Love is the way we sustain that contact. The divine in me bows before the divine in each one of you.